The Nagging. Naturalist. It's the Nagging Naturalist Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another mini-sode for The Hellbender. This will be the final episode for The Hellbender. As we move from April into May, I will be introducing a new species next month. Many episodes like this are more casual and typically shorter in order to have discussions around the highlighted species of the month or other talks about wildlife and conservation. If you haven't listened to the first episode about the Hellbender where I introduce it, please feel free to stop this and go listen to that and some of the other episodes I've had about the Hellbender so far. But this particular segment, which is called the Tabletop RPG Naturalist, is basically going to be just kind of messing around a bit and looking at ways to introduce Hellbenders and Hellbender-like creatures to a tabletop RPG game. If you're unfamiliar with tabletop RPGs, most people are at the very least familiar with RPGs or roleplay games. A lot of video games, computer games, and even some board games are based on roleplay systems. Basically games where the choices you make can impact the game and you get to make choices versus just being told what to do based on certain actions. So if you've never played a tabletop RPG game or an RPG game in general, I always love recommending people to try one out because it's really fun and they really let you express a lot of creative freedom in how you can affect the game. Some of my favorite roleplay games in general have been games like The Elder Scrolls. The most recent incarnation, at least from the video game system, was their Skyrim game, which was a lot of fun. And of course, anybody who's played that knows that as you make decisions, it impacts the gameplay. And I've even played computer games too. One of my favorite computer games is Guild Wars. People who play games like World of Warcraft are familiar with a game like Guild Wars, where it's a massive online community playing these games together. So for tabletop RPGs, most people typically know Dungeons & Dragons. It's one of the bigger ones, but there are other types of tabletop RPGs as well, like Pathfinder, Starfinder, Warhammer. There's a Star Wars and a Star Trek game, World of Darkness, Shadowrun, Vampire Masquerade, just a whole plethora of these different tabletop RPG games. By far, though, ones that people are most familiar with and one of the most commonly played games is Dungeons & Dragons. So in order to keep this a little concise, I'm going to focus on Dungeons & Dragons as an example. But of course, I am by no means advocating to use this just for Dungeons & Dragons. I would definitely recommend if you wanted to try out bringing the Hellbender into your own game, feel free to use it based on whatever your system has, if they have anything that you can use. What I will be doing is I'm going to be taking some already existing creatures from D&D and manipulating their stats to reflect more of the Hellbender rather than trying to make it from scratch, because I find that it's a little bit easier to integrate some of these simpler homebrews if you just borrow a pre-existing system and manipulate it a little bit. So let's get started. The first thing I'm going to start with is just Hellbenders in general, just having a general large salamander in your game. As mentioned in the very first episode discussing where they're from, these guys are from the Appalachian region and the Ozarks, so they tend to live in temperate, mountainous places, and they prefer clear, fast-running water, so clear streams and rivers. If it's any kind of polluted area or there's a lot of mud and sediment, they're not going to thrive there. So these nice crystal streams and rivers and mountainous areas and temperate regions of the world are really the best place for them to thrive. I'm using the stats from just the general frog from D&D. It is a tiny unaligned beast because why would a frog have an alignment? If you're not familiar with alignments, you may have seen memes about it online talking about lawful good or lawful evil, chaotic neutral, you know, things like that. It's basically just trying to help people understand the characters they create, what might be their motivations, where's their moral compass that's going to help guide their actions through the game. Of course, frogs don't care. Frogs just want to eat and live. Same with hellbenders. They are going to be tiny, unaligned beasts. A frog has an armor class of 11. Now, armor class is based on a couple of things. Now, it can be things as simple as tough skin or armor, but you also need to consider things like how dexterous they are, how agile can they move out of the way, how hard are they to actually hit. And also, it can also be a little bit of how difficult are they to even be seen. Because if you've ever seen a picture of a hellbender in its natural environment, they have optimal camouflage. Frogs can have some pretty decent camouflage, but I would certainly argue that with how dexterous the hellbender can be, they can very easily turn their bodies very quickly and jerk side to side. They obviously can't do the leap that a frog does, but they certainly, when in water, are very agile. You could argue that they might have a different armor class on land because they are going to be completely useless on land versus water. But if they're in the water, I'd give them an armor class of about 12 or 13. Just give them a little boost to that 11, because I do find that they more easily crawl into spaces and get places, and it has a lot to do with the shape that they have. It allows them to easily slide in places, get away from things. They're highly camouflaged. Like I said, they can turn very quickly. They're incredibly fast. If you ever get a chance to look at a video of males when they are fighting during the breeding season, they move scary fast as they attack each other. In my experience, in my opinion, they're more dexterous, better camouflaged, and honestly tougher skinned than most frogs are. So yeah, about that 12 to 13 armor class. The hit point for the frog is 1, or you can roll a 1d4 and subtract 1 from that total, so max hit points are 3. I would definitely give the hellbender a little bit more. I would probably give them at least a 1d6 without the subtraction. I would say that hellbenders are surprisingly tough creatures and would not go down as easily as 1 hit point. I would say if their opponent's weak enough, they could take at least 2 hits. The speed for the frog is 20 feet, and then it says it has a swim speed of 20 feet. Now, of course, I assume the regular speed means walking, or in this case, hopping, on land. As I said, the hellbender is pretty useless on land. If you're going to give the hellbender a land speed, I would actually give them like a 5-foot speed and just leave the swim at 20 feet. They are not, again, I can't emphasize this enough, they're not designed to be on land. These are fully aquatic animals, and they are going to be perfectly useless on land. I'll explain ways to get around that as we move forward and talk about some of the other ways to introduce it. But if we're talking about putting the hellbender in as it is into this world that you're playing in, just leave them in the water. Getting into some of the stats. So there are 6 core stats. There's strength, dexterity, constitution, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma. The strength of the frog is 1, which is a -5 modifier. So, like I said, I'm of an opinion that hellbenders are sturdier than frogs. And to be honest, after seeing them fight, I would argue that hellbenders probably deserve at least a 4 or 5 in strength. And so, let me think. So that would be a -4 modifier instead, which is, you know, not great, but it's better than 1. So we'll leave it at that. The dexterity of the frog is 13 plus 1 modifier. So I would say the hellbender probably has at least 13. You could arguably bump it up a bit. I guess it depends. Like I said, this dexterity is probably based on the frog's ability to leap and hop. But for the most part, that's about all they're doing. They're not necessarily able to have a lot more maneuvering. Even though hellbenders have very short legs, so they can't do anything as agile as leaping for the most part, they do have very long, slender bodies that are very flexible. They can completely turn around and bite their tails if they want to. And so 13 minimum, maybe even bump it up to a 15 and give them a +2 modifier. But yeah, it's in that neighborhood, I'd argue. At the end of the day, if you decided to implement this, it's your game and you can homebrew it any way you want to. I am just making some suggestions for making it as close to the real thing as possible. Constitution for a frog is 8 with a -1 modifier. If that's where we're putting frogs at, then I would put hellbenders at a 10 with a 0 modifier, simply because, again, I believe that hellbenders are sturdier than your run-of-the-mill frog. Like, if we're just thinking about the green frog, which is like the staple frog that a lot of people in North America think of when they think of your classic frog, I would give the hellbender better stats than a green frog any day. The intelligence of the frog is a 1 with a -5 modifier. I don't really see any reason to change this. As much as I love the hellbender, I'm not going to pretend that they're necessarily that much smarter. I've never really looked into how well they train under human care, how well they learn things such as target training and things like that. Maybe they're more intelligent than I can give them credit for, but based on my current knowledge of hellbenders, I see no reason why their intelligence should be higher than that of a frog. However, going to wisdom, the frog's wisdom is 8 with a negative 1. I love frogs. Please don't take this episode as me just bashing on frogs. But frogs can be pretty dumb. They can do pretty dumb things. I've literally watched a frog jump into the mouth of a predator unwittingly. And when I think of wisdom, I think of intuition and instinct, things that are going to help you survive and thrive in the world. If a frog is at an 8 with a negative 1 modifier, I'm going to give the hellbender at least a 10 with a 0 modifier, because I've never watched a hellbender jump into the mouth of a predator the way I have a frog. Also, hellbenders don't sing songs at night, attracting predators like herons and snakes and such to come eat the buffet of frogs singing at night. So, really not as smart as the hellbender, which really just kind of keeps to itself and just stays alive. The charisma of the frog is a 3 with a negative 4. I already take offense for this on behalf of the frog. I think frogs are very charming animals, and anybody who thinks differently is, they're entitled to their opinion, but I have to strongly disagree. I would already give the frog at least a 6 in charisma with a negative 2 modifier. It's weird. I never understood the it's so ugly, it's cute concept until I met animals like the hellbender. I think that despite its appearance, how people might be turned off by it, I find hellbenders to be completely charming animals, and I would give the hellbender an 8 at least. So that's an 8 with a negative 1 modifier. Don't cross me and my salamanders, man. Moving on from the stats, we go on to other traits that they have. So in skills, the frog is given a plus 1 perception bonus, which is cool. If the frog gets a plus 1, the hellbender has to get at least a plus 3. The hellbender is, when it's in the water, incredibly perceptive. It has extra sensory to help them be more aware of their environment, because they do have very small eyes. And their eyes are not necessarily as useful as a frog's eyes are, because vision isn't as important for them. I would say that the hellbender is going to be very in tune with changes in the water, changes in pressure, changes in temperature, and things like that, which, you know, if somebody comes splashing through the water and disturbs it, they're going to know to hide deeper into their holes and make sure that they're staying safe. The frog is also given a stealth of plus 3. I would give the hellbender more than that. Even though the hellbender is typically bigger than frogs, it is by far better camouflaged, and it's typically hiding too, so it even gets cover bonuses if we're going to argue that point. So I'd give the hellbender like a plus 5 to stealth. They're just incredibly good at not being seen. I guarantee you, if you've ever gone tubing or whitewater rafting or anything like that in a clear, clean stream or river in Appalachia, you probably swam or floated or kayaked or something over a hellbender without ever knowing it, even though it's this giant salamander. They are just really great at not being noticed at all. Total rogues. Under senses, the frog is given dark vision of 30 feet. I would say the hellbender probably, rather than dark vision, has blind sight for 30 feet because, again, tiny eyes, not great at seeing things, and they're very perceptive at extra senses. So their sensory is going to extend outside of what's visual. So even if it's pitch dark outside, this blind sight is going to allow them to be very in tune with what's going on around them, even if it's so dark that they literally can't see anything. The frog has a passive perception of 11. I would give the hellbender at least a passive perception of 14 or 15. Again, these are animals who are very in tune with their environment. They are paying attention to what's going on for a variety of reasons. It's not necessarily always looking out for danger, especially as adults, but they are trying to keep in tune with things for prey. During certain seasons, it's going to be for mates. They do try to hide when there are disturbances. So I do think that they are definitely very aware, and because of how connected they are to changes in the water, they probably have a higher perception. The challenge rating for a frog is 0, with 10 experience points for killing it. I don't want to think about you trying to kill the hellbender, but I would say it's probably about the same. Frogs, of course, are amphibious. They can breathe in air and water. Granted, it does depend on the type of frog. This isn't like a thing that technically applies to all frogs, because toads are frogs. But anyway, the point is, hellbenders are not amphibious. Again, if we're doing a literal translation of hellbenders into this setting, they only live in water. They, even though they have a vestigial lung, they cannot breathe air. They absorb oxygen from the water through their skin. And while they can tolerate being out of water for a period of time, it's like holding your breath underwater, how you use your constitution, and then you multiply to get how many seconds or minutes you can survive underwater based on that. Same thing with the hellbender. You'd probably have to look at its constitution and go, okay, it has a constitution of like 10, so it can only be out of water for like a couple of minutes before it's potentially going to suffocate. So just consider that. Not amphibious. No need to have that trait. It literally doesn't matter. The frog is, of course, giving a standing leap action. No real point in having that for a hellbender. However, I would actually give it an attack. Hellbenders can bite. If you ask anybody who's gone, you know, snorkeling or rafting or anything like that, swimming in some of these places where hellbenders live, they either have been or know somebody that's potentially been bit by a hellbender. And while they don't have big, sharp teeth, they do have pretty strong jaws, and they can latch on and probably leave a good bruise if there's no protection between you and their mouths. I would certainly give them the ability to have the bite action, even as just a simple tiny beast, because they absolutely can do it. So moving on from the regular frog, in a lot of games, especially fantasy games, you're going to see giant or dire versions of a lot of animals. Common examples are like giant snakes, dire wolves, blah, 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 blah. There is a giant frog in D&D. It is a medium unaligned beast. And just running through the stats real quick, it again has the armor class of 11, if we're talking about a giant hellbender. So when we make it giant, I envision things like the giant Chinese salamander, where they're like, you know, 4 feet long or so, maybe even larger. The problem is that with that size, they actually get heavier, more ungainly, easier to see. They're no longer as apt to hide, depending on their environment. So for all the bonuses they got as just regular hellbenders against the frog, when we look at the giant frog, it's going to change a little bit. I'd probably leave the armor class about the same at this point. I wouldn't necessarily give it any kind of bonus, because I do think that with the size growth, it might have lost a little bit of that dexterity that it has. Again, this does depend on it being in water. If it's on land, you know, 0 armor class, man, it'd just lay there like a lump. But in water, it probably still is able to, you know, move through the water very well, paddle its way away, and be relatively dexterous, but definitely not better than the frog at this point. Hit points for the giant frog are 18, or rolling 4d8. I'd probably leave that be as well. It's probably about the same it would be for a giant hellbender, at least. Speed. Again, the frog has a 30-foot speed and swim speed. I would probably actually leave the hellbenders the same as before when it wasn't giant. 5-foot speed on land, and probably a 20-foot swim speed. And you know what? If you ever look up a picture of the absolute loafs that are giant Chinese salamanders, you'll understand why I'm being so critical of them if they're giant, because they're just not agile animals. Moving in the stats, strength is a 12 with a +1 bonus for the giant frog. I agree with that. Dexterity is a 13 +1 for the giant frog. I might actually roll that back for a giant hellbender to a 10 or 11 with a 0 modifier. They're just not going to be that great. Constitution is an 11 +0. This is one of the few places where I might actually bump them up, because again, very sturdy animals. Really, just if you haven't yet, Google a picture of the giant Chinese salamander. It is just this huge animal. And they're relatively tough skinned, even though their skin can be sensitive to the touch. As long as you're not touching them with straight pollutants for the most part, they're pretty sturdy animals. So I would probably have a 12 to 13 constitution at least, so that would give them potentially a +1 modifier. And for intelligence, the giant frog goes up to a 2 with a minus 4. Why not? Let's just leave it as is. And the wisdom is a 10 with a plus 0 modifier. Perfect. Charisma, still insulted, is a 3 with a negative 4. Let's give the giant frog and the giant hellbender an 8 in charisma with a negative 1. Skills, we have a perception of plus 2 for the giant frog. Now, with the giant hellbender, if it's similar to the giant Chinese salamander, it now has a lot more surface area to be sensitive with. So this is one of the few instances where its size benefits it. So I would actually give it something closer to plus 5 or 6 in perception. The stealth of the giant frog is a plus 3. I would leave that as is because I don't think that the giant hellbender gets to improve in that because, again, it's huge. It can't hide under rocks as easily unless you change how the streams work and they have more places to hide. But, yeah, plus 3 is fine. Senses, again, it's got the dark vision. I would change the frog's dark vision to blind sight for the hellbender, still 30 feet. Passive perception for the giant frog is a 12. I would leave it at a 15 or 16 for the giant hellbender. Again, more surface area, very sensitive to a lot of changes, very in tune with its environment. Got to reflect that in how it's perceiving the world. The challenge rating for the giant frog is 1/4, and it's 50 experience points. Sure, why not for the giant hellbender? Please don't kill it, but you know, I guess if you're going to, that's a thing you could write down. Anyway, amphibious. Again, no need to have this. Standing leap. Again, we don't need this. Scratch both of those. Actions. The giant frog has 2 actions. It can bite and swallow. And looking at these 2 things, I believe that these are both perfectly valid actions for the giant hellbender as well. The bite attack was something that I already discussed before. And if you've ever seen a hellbender open its mouth, you realize that basically anything that fits in it, it can swallow. So if a regular-sized hellbender can already swallow whole a regular-sized green frog, the giant hellbender can probably swallow whole this giant frog, which is pretty intimidating. So we'll just leave those things as is because those do kind of reflect reality. So moving on from just beasts in general, what if you want to create an anthropomorphic group of people that have the qualities of a hellbender? Well, keeping up with the theme of the frog, since it's the only really amphibian I can use, there is a group of anthropomorphic frog folk called Bullywugs in D&D. These are medium humanoid-like creatures. They are considered neutral evil, but I don't really believe in making groups inherently. To be honest, I think alignment only belongs to characters. I don't really like the idea of them belonging to groups, because in all honesty, I don't know why frogs have to be evil. Frogs do incredibly wonderful things for us, and I don't understand how them becoming more humanoid somehow makes them evil. Anyway, rant aside. The Bullywugs have an armor class of 15 if wearing their hide armor and having their shield. Now, with the Hellbender, let's assume that it takes on a more humanoid form. It gets nice long limbs versus its short stubby ones. Probably still has its nice little paddle-like tail, wide broad face. And yeah, we'll stick it in some hide armor if we're assuming that it's going to be in a more primitive setting where maybe it's living in the wilds versus towns. Maybe it's living out in the mountains where they're naturally occurring and it's wearing some thick hide armor. I'd probably leave it at the armor class of 15. That makes sense. Not sure that they necessarily need shields. Maybe they could have it. I don't know. Again, this is something you can tinker with if you want to design something like this. It's just, I don't know why in my head it's weird to imagine them with shields. I just see hellbenders as not really caring very much. I've watched them do things where it just is obvious that they do not care. They're very funny animals. Hit points for a Bullywug is 11 or 2d8 plus 2. I definitely bump that up for a hellbender. Again, thick-skinned animals, very fearless creatures for the most part. They're not afraid of much. I think that, you know, these very strong creatures with high constitution would probably have better hit points than that. So let's bump them up to 20, just a nice round number. Again, you can finagle with it, or you could roll for it. So for the Bullywogs, it's 2d8 plus 2 for their potential armor. So that's 16 plus 2. So that's potential of 18 for the Bullywogs. So I would counter that with 2d12 for rolling for hit points. Now the speed of the Bullywogs is 20 feet on land and a 40-foot swim speed. I'd probably leave that similar for the Hellbenders. Again, they weren't necessarily fast to begin with, but if they do have longer limbs and they're more adapted to living on land, then it makes sense for them to have a more regular swim speed. And their swim speed should be higher because they are probably going to have still that nice hydrodynamic body shape for the most part, even with the long limbs and their paddle-like tail. So they would be more comfortable swimming versus walking still. Moving on into stats, their strength for the Bullywog is a 12 with a plus 1 modifier. I'd probably leave that as is. That sounds pretty decent. Dexterity is a 12 plus 1. Considering that our Hellbender now has some nice long limbs and a more adapted body that can be in both land and water, I'd probably give them higher dexterity again because they really are adapted to being slick, moving quickly, being able to move very adeptly in their environments to help them survive. And assuming those survival traits can blend in with this new humanoid form, I would give them maybe a 14 with a plus 2 modifier in dexterity. Constitution is a 13 plus 1. Again, I'd bump that up. I'd give them like a 15 or 16 and give them a plus 2 modifier to their constitution because they're just really tough animals, and there's no getting around that, whether it's a regular hellbender or one that's walking around on human-like limbs. Doesn't matter. They're going to be tough. The intelligence of the Bullywogs are 7 with a minus 2. I see no real reason to change it. Their wisdom is a 10 with a plus 0 modifier. Again, no real reason to change it. Charisma, slightly less insulted. It's a 7 with a minus 2. Because I love my Hellbender so much, maybe I'd give it an 8 or a 9 with a plus 3 modifier. Or sorry, I just mixed up my numbers with a minus 1 modifier. Moving on from that, we have skills. And so for the Bullywogs, they only have a stealth of plus 3, which, to be fair, I'd leave that for the Hellbender too. But I would keep that perception bonus too. I'd probably give a plus 1 or plus 2 to perception for the Hellbenders. While they're not necessarily in water, you have to understand that their skin and this fish-like lateral line that they have is literally meant to feel the changes in the ambient environment. So whether that's water or air, they are literally designed to feel changes. So if it suddenly gets warmer or colder, if a breeze picks up, if there's suddenly a chemical that's introduced to the air or anything like that, they're going to be pretty sensitive to it. So I would definitely give them perception bonuses. And moving into sentences, it says that they do have a passive perception of 10 for the Bullywog. I would give it a 15 for the Hellbender, and I would keep that blindsight too that I had mentioned. They dropped the dark vision for the Bullywog, but I would definitely give the blindsight to the Hellbender because, again, their eyes are really pretty useless. And even if we gave them some regular eyes, their body is still so attuned to the environment that blind sight would still come into play, I would argue. Languages, which is always a fun one. Languages of a Bullywog is Bullywog. The Hellbender folk that we're creating can, of course, have their own language that they obviously understand. The challenge rating for the Bullywog is 1/4 and 50 experience points, which, you know, seems kind of strange because I understand the giant frog is also a medium creature like the Bullywog, but you would think something that was a little bit more intelligent and formed a society would be a harder challenge rating. And I've never understood low challenge ratings for some of the more humanoid creatures. I'd give the Hellbender a 1/2 challenge rating at least with 100-point experience because you know what? If you can take down that sturdy creature, you'd probably deserve it. But again, not really encouraging the killing of Hellbenders, guys. Please don't. Now, the bullywogs are amphibious, of course. It's saying that they breathe in air and water. I would give that to this, you know, anthropomorphic hellbender as well. So you could argue that while it can still breathe through its skin versus its mouth, it can breathe oxygen in either setting. Because I feel like it'd be really cruel if we said that the hellbender, which is naturally aquatic, suddenly can't breathe underwater because we turned it into this anthropomorphic creature. I would give it the amphibious trait. It's fine. It has the ability to speak with frogs and toads because, of course, a bullywug could. And if it's useful, you know, the hellbender can speak with salamanders. That's perfectly fine. The bullywug has swamp camouflage. Because of course it does. Because frogs don't live in anything but swamps, obviously. The hellbender being a creature of a forest, I would of course, you know, say that if it does have great camouflage, you could always tweak it that maybe you'd make its favored terrain mountains and forests because that's where they're from. And so you could probably tweak it in that way. So it might have advantage in those terrains when they're doing things like dexterity or stealth checks in those areas. The bullywug, of course, has that beautiful standing leap, which I would still not give to the hellbender because why would I? The actions of the bullywug are that it has a multi-attack, a bite attack, and a spear attack. Now the multi-attack covers the bite and the spear attack. I guess if you wanted to, you could keep this. I personally see the hellbender as a club or mace wielder, getting that, you know, blunt damage going. But, I mean, this one's really just personal semantics more than anything scientific, I could argue. So, you could keep the multi-attack, the bite, and the spear attack. But if you switched it out for something else, it'd be pretty simple to look up the stats on a mace or a club or something like that and just rewrite it in. Of course, it's not going to have the spear's range, because I certainly, well, you could technically chuck a mace at somebody, but I hope you're really strong and you have some really good aim. But yeah, so these are the three things that I looked at when I looked at how I might choose to homebrew or make my own hellbender representation in a tabletop RPG game like Dungeons & Dragons. Again, whatever format you play in, whatever game you play, if you have stats for creatures or anthropomorphic creatures, you can sometimes just kind of take those stats and tweak them to suit another creature. So after discussing all the different traits that the hellbender has and how that might impact its stats, hopefully this can help you kind of manipulate something or even just create it from scratch if you want to. And bring a little bit of representation into your game if you want to. There are a lot of people who like to create supplements for games like Dungeons & Dragons. There are a lot of places where you can find that. Honestly, I'm on Twitter a lot, and Twitter has a massive tabletop RPG community, and there are a lot of really awesome people on there who make supplements for them. I actually follow a couple who run something called the Underground Oracle, and they are basically creating their own homebrew supplements for Dungeons & Dragons. So you can always search that out too. People might have already created some of this content, and all you have to do is go out and buy it from them. It's usually not too expensive if you're just buying small supplements like how to bring certain creatures or how to create a group of people or anthropomorphic animals in games. Might only cost you a couple of bucks. So you can go online and find ways of supporting some of these individuals and their creativity, and it will help you bring some of that diversity into your game if you don't want to create it from scratch. So anyway, that is the Tabletop RPG Naturalist segment for you. Thanks so much for listening in on this minisode, and thank you so much for listening in on the Hellbender this month. I'm really excited to roll out next month's animal. It's going to be a really good one. It's one of my personal favorites. If you would like to find more information about the Nagging Naturalist or some of the things I discuss, you can find me on my website, thenaggingnaturalist.com. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram under the Nagging Naturalist. And my Twitter handle is @nag_naturalist. If you have questions or comments, please feel free to reach out to me at my email, thenaturalist@thenaggingnaturalist.com. And I can't wait for you guys to hear about our new animal next month. See ya.